is Wednesday, 11th October 2016. This is the Maker Force Show.
And I'm your lead host, Sudarshan.
I'm Ambrose.
I'm Orcas, I think.
I'm Shihun.
I'm Xiacheng.
And I'm Isaac.
Yeah, so first we'll have Ambrose explaining to us the rationale of Maker Force.
Maker Force is a collection of makers, i.e. the six of us, who come together just to purely make things. You know, things for the fun of it, sometimes into a sort of a school project, but mostly just to make things for the sake of making things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. So what kind of things do we do as a group, Yasha?
When we started, we had a motto to make what we don't with what we have. So it's about making new things, innovating.
So what kind of specialities? What do we do that's distinct from other people that do that are the same age as us?
So our group has six people and we have a varying fields within this group, and we think that this combination of different specialties makes our group strong.
Okay, so why don't each of us just tell them what we do best? So I'm going to start. I do hardware engineering, so I work on things like PCB design, electronics, sometimes some woodworking, and I also do some software design, and that's C, mostly C and Python. So Ambrose.
I'm Ambrose, I do a lot of software engineering, software development. I like DevOps and computer networking and computer security. And I do a lot of Linux and a bit PCB design like Sudarshan, but less than him.
Okay, I'm Daniel, but most of them call me Orcas. I'm basically like an Ambrose Lite. I do a lot of software and programming things, like sysadmin things too, but to a lesser extent than he does. I also dabble in hardware and occasionally vector art.
That's okay, I just do CS and like general programming that I'm interested in.
What's your name?
Shihun.
What kind of programming languages do you do?
Python. I'm doing Android stuff, so.
Okay,
I'm Xiacheng. I dabble in a little bit of everything, like programming like these guys, and a bit of hardware. And I also make flying things, like drones and planes.
Yeah. Isaac?
My name's Isaac, and I do everything software related that's not web. but what I specialize in is mainly AI and machine learning stuff. So. Yeah.
Okay, that's great. So first we're going to be starting off by doing a lightning round on everyone. We're going to start with Isaac because he has to leave soon.
Right now,
yeah. So okay, favorite OS?
It's good with Windows, that's what I use.
Dang.
Because, yeah.
Okay, Vim or Emacs?
Both.
Why?
Okay, I'm not going to go into why because it's lightning round, but Vim on my phone and Emacs on my computer. Because you can use key bindings on your computer.
Okay, sure. Command line or GUI?
I would prefer GUI if you could use it, because you can use a mouse. Like, come on.
Okay, makes sense. Favorite programming language?
Definitely Java. No, even if it's dying.
What programming language do you think people should learn the first?
I think the easiest one to learn would be Python. Python is a very easy programming language to learn because a lot of its keywords are very English, but it also you can still like create fairly sophisticated apps with it.
Okay, if you could use one word to describe yourself, what would it be?
AI.
Okay, makes sense. If you could have one piece of tech right now, what would it be?
One piece of tech.
Anything, it could be sci-fi.
Immortality is not tech, right?
No.
Time machine.
Okay.
Come on.
What's your favorite subject in school?
Favorite subject in school, CS, I guess, if that counts. Otherwise, math, I guess.
Soldering, writing, or typing?
I don't solder.
Just tell me, give me one.
Typing. I think I type faster, actually.
Favorite text editor?
Like Notepad?
Yeah.
Notepad plus plus then.
Science, technology, engineering, math.
Tech works, I guess.
Okay, hardware or software?
Software.
Okay, great, that's it. From Isaac.
Can I leave?
Yeah, you can leave now.
Okay,
bye,
peace out.
Isaac.
Bye.
Next, we'll be doing a lightning round on Xiacheng. So let's start. Favorite OS?
Windows.
A lot of people are cringing.
Or maybe Android. I think Android is better.
Okay, okay. Command line or GUI?
GUI. If it's meant to be usable, it's meant to be intuitive, so just use it.
Makes sense. 8-bit or 32-bit?
32.
Vim or Emacs?
I don't use either.
Why?
There's really no point. GUI is better, I said
already. Well, no, Emacs has GUIs, but okay.
Favorite electronics component?
The resistor.
Okay, it's exactly. You say the wire.
The wire. Okay.
ARM, ADR, or PIC?
What?
Never mind, we'll skip that question.
Okay.
One word to describe yourself.
I like to fly.
So fly.
Yes.
If you could have one piece of tech right now, what would it be?
Actual feasible one?
Doesn't matter, it could be sci-fi.
Oh, okay, then a warp drive.
Favorite subject in school?
Math or physics or chem?
That's a lot of favorite subjects.
Sorry, history. Yes, history.
Soldering, writing, or typing?
Typing.
Favorite text editor?
Atom.
Favorite hobby?
Radio control fades. Drones.
How long do you study in a week?
How much time I spent studying?
Yeah.
5 hours? Maybe 7.
Science, technology, engineering, or math?
Oh, STEM? Actually, I do everything.
So you do a bit of everything?
Quite a bit of everything.
Hardware or software?
Software.
Okay, that's it for Jia Sheng. Next will be Shehen's turn. Favorite OS?
Windows.
Why is everyone saying Windows today? Vim or Emacs?
Vim.
Command line or GUI?
GUI.
Favorite programming language?
Python.
One word to describe yourself?
Piggy.
Piggy, okay. Not what I expected. If you could have one piece of tech right now, what would it be?
The Pixel XL.
Okay.
We will be talking about that later.
Yeah. Favorite subject in school?
Yes.
Soldering, writing, or typing?
Writing.
Favorite text editor?
Atom.
Favorite hobby?
Studying.
I don't think studying is a hobby, but yeah, that was a full-time job. How long do you study in a week?
At least 2 hours a day.
That's about
a lot.
20.
A lot.
Yeah, okay. Science, technology, engineering, or math?
All of them.
Hardware or software?
Software.
Okay, great.
Now
it's Orca's turn. Okay, favorite OS?
Okay, maybe Arch or Arc, depending on how you pronounce it.
ARM, ADR, or PIC?
I'll say ARM, but I like PIC because it's like it's like the one everyone ignores.
At least for this age.
Command line or GUI?
Command line is typing is much easier than having to move a mouse around.
Yes.
Favorite electronics component?
There are a lot of them, but maybe germanium diodes because photo electricity.
Yeah. Vim or Emacs?
Vim.
Favorite programming language?
Yes, Steno's underrepresented.
Okay. Favorite programming language?
C.
8-bit or 32-bit?
8.
Soldering, writing, or typing?
Writing.
Favorite hobby?
The lack of a hobby.
Okay.
Okay, clearly you don't have a hobby. How long do you study in a week?
Explain to me the concept of studying.
You're gonna take that as a 0. One word to describe yourself.
Oh, gosh.
That's a... Okay. If you could have one piece of tech right now, what would it be?
TARDIS.
TARDIS?
Yes, oh. The TARDIS.
The TARDIS. Okay, catch up.
Nice.
Science, technology, engineering, or math?
They're all really intertwined.
Okay, fair enough. Hardware or software?
You cannot have software without hardware, and hardware is meaningless without software.
And that's not true sometimes.
Shh.
Okay.
Weren't you always advocating about analog electronics?
Yeah, he was.
Eh? What happened to that?
Choose the deepest sounding thing you can at any juncture.
Okay, Ambrose, come.
Okay.
Command line or GUI?
Command line, definitely.
Favorite electronics component?
I'll go for the wire, yes.
The wire, yeah. I was expecting someone to say that. 8-bit or 32-bit?
32-bit, because STM32s and the whole series, yes.
Favorite OS?
Linux in general, but actually Arch Linux for this time.
Vim or Emacs?
Vim, definitely.
One word to describe yourself.
Random.
Soldering, writing, or typing?
Typing.
Favorite subject in school?
CS, because it's now a subject, yes.
Which is the first programming language you think a person should learn?
Definitely Python, because it's super easy to start with.
If you could have one piece of tech right now, what would it be?
Let's see. It mustn't be tech.
Well, yeah.
Dang.
It cannot exist yet.
Another router box.
Science, technology, engineering, or math?
Engineering and tech, just no math.
Everything except math. Hardware or software?
Software.
So, Sudarshan, what's your favorite subject in school?
Physics.
What's your favorite programming language?
Python.
How long do you study in a week?
5 hours.
What's your favorite OS?
Windows.
Almost at Ubuntu.
What's your favorite hobby?
RC planes, basically. Same as you. And quads.
Give me a word to describe yourself.
Hands-on.
That's two. Okay.
It's a hyphenated word.
Okay.
8-bit or 32-bit?
32-bit.
You forgot 16-bits.
Doesn't matter, screw 16-bits.
What's your favorite electronic component?
Transistor.
Fame or Emacs?
Neither.
Right, okay.
I do not code. Okay, so now we're going to move on to the new segment. Today we'll be talking about a bit about the Google announcement and also touching on the recent Arduino merger. So recently Google had their hardware announcement event and they are releasing a bunch of products, mainly the Pixel smartphone, as Shihun mentioned during the lightning round. So we'll be talking about the significance of Google releasing these things and really about how they're actually trying to push Google Assistant to the wider audience. As Sundar Pichai said, the next 10 years is going to be pushing AI to the common person. So I am Jia Sheng. Going to tell us about the release of the new Pixel smartphone and how what it has to do with Google Assistant and AIs in general.
Alright, so the new Pixel phones, right? The main software difference between the Pixel phones and other Android phones is that the version of Android that it ships with will have Google Assistant built in. It will replace what is currently Google Now on Tap, which is pressing and holding the home button. And there are some rumors that it won't arrive on other phones. So not sure what Google is doing there, but it might not be true. As Sundar Pichai said in his presentation, the past 10 years was the mobile revolution where everyone got mobile phones and smartphones became a lot better. And now everyone is connected. And he said the next 10 years is about AI. It's about putting the AI in the hands of the people in the smartphones that we already have. And so Google is making the first push with the Google Assistant on the Pixel phones.
Okay. Also, the Pixel is, they are still manufactured by HTC, but they're not actually allowing HTC to put any kind of branding on it, unlike the Nexus line where they actually allow HTC to basically, you know, take ownership of. It's like Google is trying to transform itself into a hardware company. And much like Apple is now, they're unifying the software experience with the hardware experience, because currently they can't really control the hardware experience because they're just sending out software experiences to all the users who are using general Android-based smartphones. There are a lot of manufacturers building these hardware phones. So Ambrose, what impact do you think this will have on like Google in general? How is it going to grow as a company?
I don't know, but like Apple, their user experience will probably become better.
Yeah, Shihun, so how about you?
I think the Pixel phones will probably help to improve the Android system quite a bit.
They also released the Google Home, and according from the website, Google says, hands-free help from the Google Assistant. Enjoy music, get answers, manage your everyday tasks, and control smart devices. So
that's Google's pitch into your house, basically acting as the Amazon Echo competitor, except I think personally it looks slightly cooler. And it's actually in conjunction with Apple releasing HomeKit, also something for the home automation market. So there are lots of people, lots of companies actually trying to get into the home automation market right now. So do you think it's actually going to become a actual feasible, is it a feasible thing to believe that home automation is going to be a big thing in like the next 5 years or something?
Okay, back in 2005, the only touchscreen devices were PDAs.
Okay, so you're saying yes.
Basically.
Yeah, back then everyone doubted that smartphones could take off. And yet, here we are.
Right now, even like the home automation market itself is actually quite fragmented. So I think someone needs to actually go there and try unifying all the devices into a single thing so that it can be implemented in a... It's more feasible to implement when everything is unified as compared to many fragmented devices operating with their separate apps, and then you have to use multiple apps to control all of them, which is kind of a pain.
As like an IoT developer, right? Sometimes you have like there are so many standards for these home automation services and protocols and everything that it's very hard to like know which one does what and what, and there's no universal answer to doing home automation right now. So I hope that like Google or Apple will come up with a unified solution that everybody can use for like very little development costs.
Okay.
Or in terms of licensing everything.
I actually also don't quite understand what Apple HomeKit is, so can you explain?
Oh, Apple HomeKit is basically just like an entire suite of APIs and tools to interface with IoT devices for Apple. On the Apple Watch and the iPhone, there's like the Home app, which is they released recently together with their software update. But it provides an interface for you to manage your home devices. I think you just like... when you buy something, you would just connect it to the network using your phone and then it'll automatically set it up for you seamlessly.
So do you think that, you know, Google Home, I mean, Google is definitely more connected into our lives right now with like their Google Now Assistant and their phones as compared to Amazon, which is just, they're not really as connected with our devices and with our phones as compared to Google. So do you think that Google Home could potentially push Amazon Echo straight off the market?
The thing is, people see Amazon as just this online buying place, as this shipper. So Google is far more widespread. It's like, it's a search engine, it's a OS maker, it's a innovating thingy. So they're more likely to accept a product from Google than say Amazon. I don't know.
In the US, a lot of people use Amazon. Like Amazon Prime, like they just buy things and it ships there within the day or within by the next day.
And especially with your one click button.
Yes, buy.
The thing is, those things are pertaining to shipping. Home automation is relatively far subject from that.
So that's what I was thinking. They might have quite, they're spreading themselves too thin over a lot of markets, and Google might actually just push them out like very quickly.
Another thing Google has is data. They have a lot of data, so they know how to like tune and refine something to appeal to a wide range of markets.
Yeah, but one thing Google Home doesn't have yet is partnerships with like smart home devices. For Google Home, it's only partnered with Nest, SmartThings, Philips Hue, and IFTTT. Whereas Amazon Echo has Nest, Echo Bee, SmartThings, Wink, Instant, Belkin, Wemo, Philips Hue, etc., etc. So,
but
it's one
Google
advantage.
They'll definitely...
So, I guess maybe Google may decide to do that, but I don't know. Amazon Echo will keep its user base for now, I guess.
For now, until they get more
given
support.
That, yeah.
Yeah, it's quite a new product. I think they should be able to rally the support, right, in my opinion. Also, what do you think are some of the problems with current home automation systems? Like, what do you think is wrong with Amazon Echo currently? Why would Google want to improve on that Amazon Echo has a flaw?
From a developer perspective, I think that really it's just you need to expose like simple APIs for developers to plug in and directly control homes.
What if I look at it from a hardware perspective? I mean, if I want to, I don't know, switch off my lights. My lights, especially in Singapore, everything is just hidden away in cables that are hidden from sight. How would I use it in HDBs?
But
you have to install some relay systems.
Yeah,
and
your switch
and you have to mess with high voltage AC, how would a normal person who doesn't have any hardware experience actually implement that so that they can actually have a true home automation system without going through the trouble of actually messing around with high voltage AC and installing relays in their house?
True contractor. Okay, when you order a fridge, do you like bring the fridge back and like attempt to wrestle into place? No, you usually have the guy come there and install it for you. So what companies like Amazon or Google need is to partner with worker stores to provide installation services, because a layman is probably busy, especially in today's modern world, so they're not going to wish to mess around with like dangerous and messy things in order to just get their thing working. So they probably want the convenience of having it just installed for them.
So if you mean it, like probably Google or Amazon or anyone who's trying to get into the home automation should probably offer a service through which they can easily implement home automation into their houses, right? And I think right now, does it exist?
There's nothing out that much, actually.
As far as I know, no.
I know there's one home plug. Basically, you plug it into your existing socket. It's something you plug into your existing socket. You'll plug your appliance into it, but that's only for AC appliances that you plug in the socket. But that one, apparently it talks HomeKit, Apple's HomeKit, and it I'm not sure how much it goes for, it's quite expensive. So there's still a steep curve for this kind of devices. And so, and I think that's one of the problems with adopting home automation now, the currently steep prices. Eventually, I hope it'll
I mean, every day you see a Kickstarter of something related to IoT or home automation.
IoT is overused.
IoT is overused. It's just purely sensors sending data, and every one of them is separate apps, and it's just very fragmented at this point. Okay, so let's move on to talking about the next futuristic thing that's up and coming, which is VR, which is already here technically. And Google released their fabric-based Daydream. So Daydream is actually named a lot of things. It's also the name of Android screensaver.
It's kind of a screensaver thing.
Yeah, so what do you think about Daydream, Jiasheng?
Daydream, I think that they're really trying to make Daydream better, because like for VR you really need a high resolution and also the high refresh rate, because it's so close to your face, and if you don't have a high refresh rate you will go dizzy. And so the Daydream is certifying phones and also like the viewers that you put on the face, so that it actually meets certain standards, like sensors that are required for the VR, as well as strong enough hardware in the phone so that it will actually output that amount of resolution and frame rate needed.
Yeah, but the Pixel phone that the Daydream is intended to be used with is only 1080p as far as I'm aware. So how does that affect your experience?
Oh, the Pixel, I'm not sure about the 1080p, but it should be good enough.
I mean, a lot of people say you need Quad HD phones to really, really experience the VR, especially with my VR headset, which is the VR1. I actually can see a difference between my OnePlus 3, which is 1080p, and my LG G3, which was Quad HD, one of the first Quad HD phones to come out. So what do you think is really the direction of VR in the coming years? Do you think phone-based VR systems are going to become mainstream, or do you think HTC Vive, Oculus Rift, or those other specialized platforms are going to become mainstream? Which way do you think VR will lean towards more, Shihan?
I think it will probably lead towards more enthusiast-oriented, like with the desktop PC, like HTC Vive and the Oculus, because those really just provide a better experience overall than with a phone VR.
But I guess they're more expensive. Like,
so only enthusiasts can actually afford to afford something like that.
So
I think it's going to fragment into two markets. There's going to be the high-end market, like the Oculus Rift, all those. For those, like you say, enthusiasts. And then there's going to be the other end of the market. With the VR devices, they can repurpose into other things, like the Google Cardboard. So in a way, it's going to be like the current PC market. You have all the high-end gaming laptops, and then you have the cheaper netbooks that are meant for word processing, internet exploring, things like that.
Yeah, but you know, but at this point where like, you know, things like Google Cardboard, they end up just being gimmicks. They are really pointless. You don't really do much with them, and even the experiences aren't that immersive. That kind of destroys the point of VR in the first place. So you can't really go too low of a price. So I would actually say that Daydream is kind of the midpoint between Google Cardboard and Oculus Rift, and it takes the market along with the other VR-based solutions like the VR One and even Samsung's Gear VR kind of things. So what we are, I think Oculus Rift will also take the market, and the new HTC Vive is pretty good. They use a really nice tracking system, and that's one of the differences between those higher-end platforms and the lower-end Daydream type of VR platform, because high-end platforms actually use proper visual trackers to measure your lateral, your movement and your head position really accurately, and that actually helps you be very oriented in the VR space, because even a slight difference in how much you move your head can actually affect your vestigial system a lot.
Right. I think like the devices like the HTC Vive for PCs, right? At that price, it's only the people who can really afford it who will go buy it. And it's with those that you have like really interesting content, like those like crazy games where you actually like whack zombies on the head and things like that. So those are probably really worth the money and the time. But like the quality that you get from Daydream VR, for example, will probably be much lower than that. And it's just, yeah, like Sudarshan said, it's just going to be a gimmick, where like the quality is not good enough that you'll continually use it over and over again. So yeah, it'll just probably just be a gimmick.
Yeah, like none of us
actively
like,
use
VR is still very unused right now at this point, I guess.
Yes.
Not sure what will happen in the next few years, but yeah, not many people are playing VR games, and VR is still too expensive.
So another one of those new VR platforms that came out recently is the PlayStation VR, in case you guys aren't aware. It runs straight off your PlayStation PS4. So it's actually much less, PS4 compared to your desktop computer, definitely your PS4 is underpowered. How do you think that will affect the gaming experience of the PS VR?
I think PS VR will do help like push it towards more mainstream consumers, because being available for a console, which like most gamers will just buy a console instead of building their own PC, so having PS VR available would be a good thing, but the quality would probably like not be as good as desktop PC, so real enthusiasts will keep going to desktops.
Okay, also it actually works off the PlayStation Eye that no one actually uses until now, and they actually use it for tracking your head. I'm not very sure about the accuracy, so how do you think it combats against the visual based accuracies of the HTC Vive? Because this actually is just a normal webcam that's doing your tracking. From what I know, the Vive will still be better, but I think this will provide reasonably good tracking still. So it'll be slightly worse, but it's the difference between 1080p phones and quality phones. You don't see the difference until you're comparing them side by side. So it shouldn't matter, and for the price, I'm actually not sure how expensive it is, but
$600.
Yeah.
US dollars. And it's on top of your PS4 purchase. So
I mean, the benefit of having it straight from some company that's already selling a console will be that the games that come with those consoles, then the games that they release will be pretty optimized for the VR experience. So
yeah. But yeah.
It's specifically marketed for.
But like on the PC, Steam has taken over the PC VR things with the Vive. So yeah, with the Vive and Steam VR. So it's almost as complete a platform as PlayStation would be. Like currently there's a lot larger console sales as compared to like PC gaming sales.
But
so
it's declining.
It'll probably maintain that market, because those people that play consoles will stay on the consoles because the reasons will still be the same, and the people on the PC will stay on the PC.
So there is gonna, okay. So moving on from VR, another thing that they released is the Chromecast Ultra, which is kind of just an updated Chromecast. I'm not really sure what the differences are.
It's just 4K HDR and Ethernet. So the concern was that streaming 4K the Wi-Fi wouldn't be able to handle 4K. So now there's an Ethernet port.
Okay, that's nice.
Wow, nice.
Yeah, they also upgraded the Wi-Fi internal. So I think they said it will work fine, but if you really need to, you can always use Ethernet.
Okay, so moving on from the Google announcement in general. Another important thing that actually happened was the recent Arduino merger.
Yay!
So I think I'll let Ambrose explain about that. Yeah.
So for a year, they've been fighting the trademark wars and who owns the Arduino trademark. The long story for short was that the hardware manufacturer decided to take the Arduino trademark and go and sell it under the Arduino trademark, with and dumping the core founders behind the Arduino platform. And so that ended up in a dispute between both the core founders and the hardware manufacturer. And so they decided to make an agreement on merging back their product lines, because like they developed a couple of different products while separated. So yeah,
so, yeah, the product line is in complete disarray right now. So yeah, even when the news had reported, they actually had to use the domain, the names like Arduino.org and Arduino Seeds, because they basically copied the whole brand over. And so, I mean, they got it settled somehow, but it's still, is this a fundamental problem with the open source community? Is that problems like this, is it even worth making things open source in the first place?
I think this demonstrates the benefits of open source. It's like throughout this entire fiasco, you still can get an Arduino board because it's open source. There are a lot of support, there's a lot of sources they can get the boards from. But it's also important to note that just because it's open source, you don't have to like just cast those two people aside. You can't cast those two organizations aside just because they're like having a bit of trouble, because yes, new boards.
Well, but one problem with the Arduino clash was that the Arduino.org, they decided to release a line of products that didn't have the open source, The Arduino.org decided to release a bunch of products like the Arduino Star series and something that weren't published open source, and it screwed up a lot of people, and
Daniel, you provided the opinion from the point of a consumer of the boards, right? But thinking about the manufacturer and the people who actually made the boards, in terms of how much money they would actually lose in someone copying their boards, is it worth it?
No, see, open source is a school of thought.
That doesn't explain much.
Yes, I'm in Trump. Anyway, open source is a school of thought. You don't make something open source. No, put it a bit. Making something open source is like... Crap, though. That actually doesn't work out. Making something open source is like trusting people to vote for you.
Okay.
No. Oh, okay, see, your fate, assuming everything is equal, like there's no underhanded background thingies going on, your fate is in the hands of someone else, but it's the concept. I don't know how you explain it. It's like asking someone why democracy is good. It's because it gives choice to the people. It gives choice to the people. You can... What?
Continue.
Yes, it's like giving choice and freedom to people is... how do you say this?
If they don't like something, they can just go to an alternative. There's always an alternative.
Yep.
Yes.
So it keeps your options open, I suppose.
But putting a board open source doesn't mean that you lose the rights to your hardware. When a lot of companies, when they release open source boards, they will usually put their trademark on it, and then their trademark is completely owned by them. So they will leave their schematics, board designs all open source, but then they will just sue companies who reuse the trademark. And so that's one of the major problems that went into the Arduino went into the Arduino config was that the hardware manufacturer decided to go overseas and register the Arduino trademarks without the founder's notice in all in places outside the US. So outside the US, Arduino.cc cannot sell as Arduino trademark. That's why they have to sell under the Genduino trademark. And so, yeah.
So that was the conflict that happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. In terms of the open source hardware community, that's what they do. They release their boards open source and they put their trademark on it and stuff. But then one of the reasons they actually do that is because even if they patent it or something, the only place patents don't work is China, as people like to say. directly quoting from someone, Dave from EVblog, yeah. So really the point is that if they open source it, it's beneficial to everyone, and if they patent it, China's still gonna copy it, so you might as well open source it. So the community is actually a quite important part of open source hardware projects that generally are catered, that they're catered to like embedded system development, especially the development boards kind of hardware business. And they like open source boards simply because of the community that it attracts, and this community actually helps them sell more boards simply because of the fact that there are more software that's available for them, for the new people who are joining to take advantage of they use the dev boards.
Yeah, sometimes some companies use a marketing stunt too, but it definitely benefits like the community around the platform you're releasing or whatever. So releasing open source is good, and
another thing about like cheap stereotypical cheap Chinese copy is that unless you're selling your board at something markedly over the so-called market price, it's like the Chinese manufacturers in this case, in order to like outcompete you, because they also want to sell their boards, because that's what they're doing, they're making boards to sell for money. They need to lower their price below yours in order to sell it. Right. The thing is, lowering this price would involve concessions such as concessions to quality. After all, when you see you're using a cheap Chinese certificate, you're not actually expecting it to work to the same degree of reliability as like say the official Arduino one. So it's like this. It's like some sort of regulatory mechanism. It's like as long as you sell your bots at a reasonable price, it's like you in some sort of manner guard yourself against piracy, because in order for piracy to like outsell you, they need to like concede quality, which will affect their selling rates as well.
Yeah, true.
Yeah,
and also yeah, basically just a matter of brand loyalty also.
So they're gonna purely rely on the fact that people actually want to support them, and with their community, will want to support them.
Yeah, especially those like very complex boards that you can't exactly manufacture.
So by four layer BGA boards, even if you send out the schematics and even the PCB design files, the common person would not be able to make it, so it doesn't really matter either. So
yeah,
you get to use the open source logo as well. So might as well, you might increase your sales.
Yeah, that's all marketing. Okay.
Yeah. So moving on, another thing that I actually wanted to talk about was smartwatches. So two people in this room actually have smartwatches right now. I have a Moto 360.
And I have an Apple Watch.
Yeah,
and
this guy has an Apple Watch.
Well, technically I do,
but I don't actually have an iPhone, so I can't
actually
use
it.
Yeah, so what did you do with your Apple Watch?
Curry fever. Curry fever.
Curry.
Okay.
What fever?
Curry.
Curry.
You don't know the expression curry fever. It's like a joking form, at least in my usage of like to seek fever with. It's a good cheap turn of phrase.
Okay, I didn't know that. You learn new things every day. So okay, Ambrose and Orca actually won two Apple Watches each.
Oh, okay.
So we're gonna let them explain what they did that allowed them to win those two Apple Watches.
Hey, okay, do you want to explain? Orca?
You basically had a very legit guy presenting for us.
Oh yes, Ashwin. Awesome guy.
Why don't you explain the story from the start?
First we went to Hackathon at SST, which was this hackathon held at SST, obviously. Which is a school in a high school in Singapore, a secondary school in Singapore, and they And we ended up winning third prize, although there was not much competition. First prize, I mean.
First prize.
And then that got us the gateway to like another IDE competition, like later that year. And then thanks to that.
Another IDE competition.
I actually did not remember.
It was called the NIC Face Off, where they basically a couple of schools would present. There was a team from each school that would present. There's a team from some school. Wait, no, it doesn't work that way.
It's basically a couple of teams who have won other competitions,
yeah.
And then they get a right to present there.
So other teams who have won a couple of other competitions get to present at this event, and they would, when we will fight to win
to the death.
Yeah. No, we'll fight for like the top prize, and then it was just we basically went.
So basically we went there, this guy presented for us, he was like very late by the way.
Yeah, Ashwin.
Yeah, he actually ended up coming a few hours and they were really really close to starting presenting when he actually arrived. And so they actually won this competition, and in the first competition they won, they got an Apple Watch each. And in this new competition they also got an Apple Watch, so they ended up getting two Apple Watches.
I don't know what IDE's fascination with Apple Watches is.
No one understands IDE's fascination with Apple Watches. Also, another question. What did you do? What did you make that won you these two competitions?
So we made this thing called Common Goods. It's available at
Carousel.
Yeah, it's basically Carousel but for free. And a random thing. Carousel was one of the judging panel at NIC Face Off.
Wait, what do you mean free Carousel?
Basically everything on Carousel. Basically like Carousel, but everything listed for $0. So it's kind of this marketplace where you can go to get free things, but and also post free things. The idea behind it is to promote community spirit. Yeah,
Absolutely.
Like
this is actually tied in with SG50, so it's set with the judges very well, I suppose.
Yeah, I guess it was very.
I mean, what were you thinking when you actually came up with this idea?
I don't know. I have to ask Wayne.
Yes,
we have no idea what was the.
I mean, you would have done some brainstorming during the hackathon.
Well, they limited us to some a couple of teams, and we happened to get like community youth, and so we decided to just. I don't know who came up with the idea, but it was not bad. Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll post a link to that below.
Okay.
Somewhere.
Common
show,
goods. Yes.
Yeah.
After ABCTA we went to after the NIC Face Off we went to ABCTA, which is Asia Pacific
Infocom Technology.
Wait,
is it Alliance or
Awards?
See, this is why you need good
names.
Asia Pacific Infocom Technology.
Yeah, this is
so
good name.
Okay. So after that we went to the After the NIC Face Off, we went to the Asia Pacific ICT Alliance or IPCTA, and there we presented to some people from other countries, and yeah, it was a very nice experience.
Yes.
With there and like, and Sri Lanka. Yeah, that's cool.
Sri Lanka, yeah.
Yeah. So coming back to the topic of smartwatches, I was going to talk about whether they are actually really useful. What's really the point of smartwatches currently? Yeah, sure.
Smartwatches? I think it's just to look cool.
Really?
Oh,
that's it.
No, okay. I give you a challenge. Count how many movies how many spy movies have protagonists have like some sort of wrist mounted device.
A lot.
Yes, a lot.
Oh gosh.
So see, it's the appeal. It's the appeal
I'll
of
say,
having
some
by your wrist.
I'll say,
I guess
that's
one.
Seriously. But according to Android Wear, it's to show you notifications of taking out your phone. So does it really do that in for Apple? I mean, it works for me.
It works very well.
It's pretty
actually.
Well, yeah.
But yeah, again, it's just for notifications. The most important thing actually is just that there's not much else you can do except for like the Apple, the Android Wear has the Google Slides app, which can use your watch as a presenter remote.
So,
which is a bit weird, but never mind. Yeah, but generally, a smartwatch is just useful as a random thing. It's not exactly concretely
useful. You can live without it, so
obviously.
Yeah.
You can live without your smartwatch. Come on.
Okay,
smartphone.
Okay, a smartwatch is like a normal watch. It's like you can pull out your phone to check the time, but it's easier to go and see your wrist.
Yeah. Except a smartwatch is not like a normal watch, because when it runs out of battery, it becomes a hunk of steel on your wrist that does nothing.
No, mine is not steel. See, the difference between a smartwatch and a normal watch is that when a smartwatch runs out of battery, it becomes a fancy hunk of steel on your wrist. When a normal watch runs out of battery, it may or may not become a fancy hunk of steel on your wrist, depending on who made the watch.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, okay.
So another point of smartwatches, I mean, other than not take out your phone, I suppose, is that especially the Android, where they actually have built-in Wi-Fi and stuff, is when I find it useful when I'm away from my phone, like I'm sitting on like the sofa at like my house, and my room's far, far away in my room, and I need to look at something. I'll be very lazy and I'll just use it to look at my watch. So that's another purpose, I suppose. So, Shuhan, what do you think smartwatches can do that will be useful to attract people in?
Like, let's say, what do you expect from a smartwatch? If
you expect anything.
I don't see the point of smartwatches. You can just take your phone out of your pocket.
But why?
Like, I mean, like, taking your phone out of your pocket only takes at most an extra few seconds. So it would be like having a normal watch is more convenient because you don't really have to charge it like so often too.
I mean, it's just one more thing. I mean, we're used to charging everything. Even Nike's new stealth-lacing shoes have to charge once a day.
Oh, really?
They invented, not invented, they replicated the Back to the Future stealth-lacing shoes.
Oh, cool.
It's quite cool, yeah. So coming back to smartwatches here. Okay, Jiasha, what do you think is the problem with Android Wear now?
Android Wear, I think it's just adoption.
So people are just not caring.
Like, watches, I do not want to be attached to the internet all of my, like, even when I'm sleeping. I know a lot of people use smartwatches as sleep trackers now as well. I do not want to be so attached all the time. There's just times you just want to lay back and just forget about the internet for a while.
I'm kind of the opposite. I want to be connected every single second. So
okay.
Yeah, everyone's different. Actually, I suppose.
No, not really. A smartwatch doesn't exactly.
It does. It does act as a sleep tracker.
Personally, I don't use it as a sleep tracker, and there's no sleep tracking functionality on.
There is.
Apple Watch?
There is.
Okay. But yeah, you have to charge it at night, so I use it as a nightstand. There's this nightstand mode where you just put it on the side and it'll show the clock.
So you use it as an alarm clock?
Yeah, an alarm clock. That's just in the morning.
Okay. So yeah, that's really, I think the conclusion is that smartwatches have no point, right? Generally.
<Yeah.
laughs> General consensus.
But me and Orca got free, so.
And I was actually more with effort.
Okay.
I just wanted to play with Android Wear, and it's pretty fun to play with.
How does self-lacing shoes work?
Oh, right.
Yeah,
talk about the self-lacing shoes.
So, like, in Back to the Future 2, I think, the main character found these Nike Mags. Like, you just slip your feet in, and it just tightens the laces on top. And so, a few days ago, they released it. And you have to charge it, and then it's like fancy LEDs in it, making it look like super cheesy.
I mean, it's for collector's purposes. They only have like 70 something in existence or something like that. You're not meant to wear it unless you're going for like some cosplay thing where you would wear it out. But other than that, it's just meant to sit on a shelf for days
but,
and days.
Where do they put the battery? Probably in the sole, right? So
yeah.
If you step
on
something sharp and then you pierce the lipo and then...
I like to not think about that. They probably have it covered. They probably,
probably with metal,
did something, yeah. Yeah, that's a pretty cool thing. You should go check it out.
Yeah.
Daniel.
So it's just laces that go left to right across the top of your foot. And when I think it's a pressure sensor at the sole. So when you put your feet in and step on it or something like that, it will tighten the laces, and with a tension sensor in the lace, it will sense how tight it needs to be.
Not bad.
So, and then you can adjust it manually as well on top of that.
It's cool, but pointless.
Yeah, okay, it's cool.
There are even some like alternatives. If you want a self-lacing shoe, there are things that do self-lace your shoe. They just don't look like the Nike Max.
But there's always
Your hands.
Your hands. The power.
There's always
of
Velcro.
Yeah. I still don't understand why people don't use Velcro.
Velcro makes a horrifying sound.
No, but you're not gonna take off your shoe, right?
Shoelaces are useful for other things, other than missing your shoes.
They're good for tying people's shoes together.
What?
And now I know what you do in your free time.
No, please, no.
Yeah, I think that's about it.
Okay, on the topic of LiPo explosions, shall we talk about the Note 7?
Why not? Might as well. So, Shihan, tell us what happened with the Note 7.
Well, so like with the original batch of the Note 7, there were lots of reports of like the batteries catching on fire, not exploding, just catching on fire and burning. So then Samsung issued a recall and it sent out this new phone. This new phone had like these green battery indicators and markings on the box, which said there was a new phone that would not explode, it catch on fire. But then after that, now there's some more reports coming out that these new phones are also catching on fire. So like some carriers in the US are already stopping the sales of the Note 7.
Well,
yeah, AT&T and T-Mobile have stopped production, and Samsung, I think, issued a statement this morning saying, asking everyone to power down and return your phones. Actually,
whoa,
stating power down and return phones.
Wow.
So it has reached a point where like people are deliberating whether or not Samsung would just abandon the Note 7 product and go straight to the next one.
Oh. But I remember I heard reports about the it was something with the charging circuit not doing proper charging when it was above 60% or something. So I think they released some firmware update after that to lock the battery percentage at 60% or something.
Yeah, they did release
a
firmware
update. Firmware update
for 60% that locks it.
I don't think it really does much because I think it's just to limit like the amount of energy that is stored in the battery so that when it catches fire it doesn't burn anything down.
I guess.
Right, it makes sense. They also banned it on Singapore Airlines recently.
Yeah,
so
they banned it on flights
either.
As well.
Nice.
So when they first banned it on flights, basically most people can't tell the difference between a Note 7 and say an S7 Edge or actually any other Samsung Galaxy phone. And considering that a lot of the public is very misinformed about technology like this, it'll be quite bad on the reputation for Samsung. It'll just forever be tarnished as the exploding phone company.
In terms of the issue that really, taking on the technical perspective of how it's actually exploding, there are a few theories. One's Ambrose's theory, they are overcharging it and then it explodes. Some problem with the battery management circuit inside the phone itself. So that is, I'm not really sure. I don't think Samsung has a lot of experience designing proper phones that do not explode, so I don't think they'll just have this one product where it just fails, because the battery management circuit should remain largely the same as they move from phone to phone. They probably retain the schematics for that.
Well, I think it may also have been something to do with the battery vendor. That's where I heard some
rumors.
Not rumors.
I think Samsung makes their own batteries. They're quite a large lithium-ion battery manufacturer.
Or at least their charging circuits. Oh, maybe their charging ICs.
I think some of the fires were not while charging.
Yeah,
there's
not
even
while
some
rumors
that they squished the battery too much.
Like
they crammed it into too thin of a case, and then
that too.
And then when you're charging it, it slowly expands. So right, so that might have caused something. One of the rumors that I heard also.
Cool.
It's quite, there are plenty of rumors. Samsung hasn't released the official statement claiming what the problem is yet. So we're all just waiting on that.
So if Samsung can't identify it properly,
they'll just kill it. They'll just kill the Note lineup. And then hope that the Note 8 doesn't explode.
S7. S8.
Oh yeah, S8. Right, I mean, it's never happened before. I don't see why it's happening now. Unless he did something radically different.
But again, one of the rumors is that the vendor for the battery charger IC may be like had some defect or something. I don't know.
It shouldn't affect.
There's always mistakes. It's one in a million possibly, but this one mistake just happened to be in the worst place possible. So they got unlucky, I guess. It's Samsung's, yeah. So yeah, it got to the point where like there's even a GTA 5 mod where you can like make that instead of the bomb, the sticky bombs, it just has Note 7.
Oh gosh.
Interesting, yeah.
A lot of jokes.
So that's gonna tarnish their reputation quite a bit. Might have affected their market share also, I don't know. But they are in a pretty good position in terms of market share until the bad phone started exploding. So if it affects their market share, then they should still be able to survive. So they're not gonna go out of business.
Alright, so I think that brings us to a close on the Make Before show for today. Oh wait, is it Wednesday in the intro?
No, Mary, just say Tuesday now, we'll crop it in.
It is Tuesday.
Okay.
It is Tuesday, October 11, 2016. This is the Maker Force signing off.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.